Tapping the Keg Daily is live for Saturday. It is March 23rd, special edition, talking about Marquette's big win over Western Kentucky and how they avoided the meltdown. We're also going to preview the game against Colorado, talk a little bit about just all that happened in the first 2 days of the tournament. I know the tournament is underway here in round two. I got this up a little later than I would have liked, but that is okay. Before we get going, we will be on PSF app tomorrow, streaming live, Marquette, Colorado. If you are a fan of Marquette, if you are not a fan of Marquette and want to watch me sweat out round two, I will be on the PSF app. So there is that. So there, that is there for you. I'll also be tweeting, Tapping the Keg on Twitter/X, Tapping the Keg Sports on Instagram and TikTok. I'm shadow banned on TikTok. I don't know what I did. I don't know if I'm ever getting out of the shadow realm. But whatever I'm doing wrong on TikTok, I guess maybe I can't swear anymore. But like swearing's part of my like nature. Like I like to swear when I'm talking on the pod. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for not sorry for being a fucking passionate fan. Am I right? So anyways. We do these podcasts usually 4 days a week. Obviously, with a moment like Marquette, we want to make sure that we do have some pods, you know, for the people as we are going on through the experience. So we have a podcast today. We are going to have a podcast on Monday recapping whatever happens, either if Marquette wins, Marquette loses, they will be our lead. We'll also talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, who have a big game against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Sunday night. Don't lose sight of that one. And then we'll talk about the Brewers too, as we're getting closer and closer to the season. Brewers are getting going on Thursday, so we'll try to figure out what we have for that in terms of recapping and talking about games and things like that. Might do it a little differently than I did last year, so I got to brainstorm on that. Any ideas, feel free to hit me up. We're on Apple, we're on Spotify, wherever else you get your podcasts. If you are joining us from the Topper Talk and still wanted to check us out, we appreciate you guys. They had a nice thing to say after Marquette won, and then I'm yelling about not having Cinderella's. I felt a little bad about that, but it's the nature of the fandom. So let's talk about Marquette and Western Kentucky. Marquette advances to the second round, winning by 18 over Western Kentucky, covering the spread, which was, I think, 14.5 when it all settled down. And now you look at that and you're like, all right, Marquette took care of business. Marquette was just like any other top team, top seeded team. No one or two lost in the first round. And I think they might have all covered too, if I'm not mistaken. Purdue wasn't covering until the very end of the game, but I'm pretty sure all ones and twos covered, which is pretty rare, but it also speaks to the bid stealers and the fact that this wasn't as strong of a low of a tournament, right? There wasn't those Princetons, Oral Roberts of the world. And you know, Western Kentucky, I thought, was maybe the best 15 seed. And I know that you might see that might sound biased. But this team, you know, had guys from Indiana, had guys from Purdue, had guys from Kentucky. So they had Power 5 guys in their team. And I think the future is really bright for this Western Kentucky program, barring that Steve Lutz stays at the program. I think that, and I was worried about this game to start. I had like this nervous gut feeling because I looked at the slate on Friday and I was like, where is the upset? Where is that big upset? Where, like, I felt pretty good about Duquesne. I actually felt good about Oakland, as weird as that sounds, just because Kentucky and Calipari have been so unpredictable for the last few years. And I was like, you know what? I see both of those, right? I see both of those potentially. And I didn't necessarily see it on Friday. Now, lo and behold, it ended up being Yale. That was the team. But I was like, what if it's Marquette? Like, what if it's, you know, in front of my eyes and it's fucking Marquette? And it wasn't. And it was for a little bit. I was nervous. Like, I was very concerned in that first half at certain points. I felt like, I was like, is this just going to be an outlier game? Is this going to be a game where we look back and Western Kentucky has made God knows how many threes. They're shooting 50% from deep and they win this basketball game. It didn't happen that way. Marquette flipped the script literally immediately in the second half, and they were able to have just a great second half propel them, and that they were able to sort of just relax and calm down. Actually, it's interesting. At halftime, I heard Chris Collins, which is an Chris Collins is an ironic thing, just as an aside, because he got hired after Steve Wojciechowski, and both got hired, you know, as part of the Coach K tree. And Chris Collins has been so much better at Northwestern than Wojo ever was at Marquette. And it really feels like Marquette, you know, and I know Wojo was billed as this like next great coach, and he was supposed to be the heir apparent to K. And I get all that. I'm not trying to do a Coach K retrospect, and I'll get to my point how this relates to Marquette. But it's just very interesting that if they hire Chris Collins, you know, maybe Shock Smart isn't here, because Chris Collins has done a great job with the Northwestern program. But why I was bringing that up is Chris Collins made a comment about how his guys were just too excited in the first half. Like, they only scored 19 points against FAU. They come back, win in overtime. And he's like, our guys were just too excited. Our guys were just too... And Chaka said the same thing. He's like, our guys were too tight. And it almost reminded me a bit of the St. John's game last year. Again, you know, St. John's and Marquette in the Big East tournament. Marquette's the one seed. And that thing went down to the wire. Marquette was lucky to win that game. They went to overtime with St. John's. It was a fight. It was a fight all game long. Now, this ended up not being a dogfight for the entire game. I thought it was going to be. It wasn't. But it was similar in that vibe of, like, everybody just felt a little too tight. And then once everybody relaxed in the second half, once everybody calmed down, Marquette became the murder machine that we have seen in the second half. And we've seen it time and again, right? The Creighton game this year at home, it was a very ugly first half. Marquette just put it on them in the second half and won that game going away. You had the St. John's game also at home. They were down 15 at one point in the first half. Marquette came back and overpowered them. You know, it's not, you don't necessarily want to do this. Like, you don't want to be that team, but it does seem like Marquette has no sort of, like, it doesn't scare them. They are not scared of the moment. They're not scared of the opportunity. And so I think that matters. I think that's important going forward. I do think that as you move on in this tournament, you don't want to put yourself in that position time and time again and hope that it's going to work. I mean, Illinois is kind of the same way. Marquette's a better version of that team. They play more defense than Illinois. But Illinois has done that a lot, where Illinois gets down early and it's like, oh God, well, you know, look out. And then Illinois just overpowers you because they are so athletic. They are so talented. They can do it in a lot of different ways. I really would like this Illinois team if they didn't have a rapist on their team and their coach wasn't a weenie. But, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. That's college basketball for you in a nutshell. All right, I will bring out the tap list. We've used the tap list before in the past, and we're bringing it back. We're talking about the things that stood out in this game for the Marquette Golden Eagles, things that I saw, players, storylines, things of that nature, and then we'll talk about Colorado, excuse me, they wouldn't like that. And then we'll move on to all the things I saw inside the tournament that are unrelated to Marquette. Stevie Mitchell's energy in the second half was exactly what this team needed. He put the team on his back, and it started everything. Stevie is a dog. I know Marquette said that in a social media post. It is so true. I love Stevie Mitchell. You've heard Josh, if you watch our live streams on the PSF app, talk about his love for Stevie. He is a super glue guy. He is not a glue guy. He is a super glue dude. 16 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks, 1 steal. He locked up Don McHenry. Like, Stevie Mitchell was fantastic, and he was built for this moment. And it did not look too big. He put that team on his back with the energy on defense. That's where it all started. And just having a guy like that on your perimeter adds such an element to what Marquette has as a basketball team. Obviously, we know about Tyler Kolek, we know about Cam Jones, we know about Oso Aguilera, but Stevie Mitchell is so important to what Marquette does, and is he to me is more the straw that stirs the drink than Tyler Kolek. Like, Tyler Kolek is obviously very important. He is an All-American. I'm not trying to discredit what Tyler Kolek does, but when Stevie Mitchell is on, when Stevie Mitchell is doing it on both ends of the court, that is the true blue best version of Marquette. So I love what I saw from Stevie Mitchell in this game. And I know Cam Jones was the KenPom MVP, and I'm going to get to Cam Jones here in a second. But Stevie Mitchell, to me, is the reason that Marquette was able to flip this game and not make it close and not have everybody tweeting like, oh my God, look out for Marquette, you know, and basically riding along with this game. This is why Marquette was able to basically flip the game on his head. It was Stevie Mitchell. Cam Jones also had a lot to do with it. 28 points on 16 shots, 5 made threes. He could not miss in the second half. That thing felt like an ocean. Like he was just shooting it into the ocean. Cam Jones just was hitting everything in stride. Tyler Kolek was feeding Cam Jones for every opportunity. You know, he had the great game against Vermont last year, but it wasn't necessarily like it was in this game. And I know you're like, well, Charlie, how is it different? Cam Jones has kind of been in rhythm for the last few weeks. Like, this is not the first time that Cam Jones has sort of, you know, found himself, right? Like, he's been on an absolute heater really since that DePaul game. Like, that has sort of where you've seen Cam Jones sort of come to life, and why I think I said, you know, as we led up into the tournament, that if they go on a deep run, I think Cam Jones is going to go into the NBA. Like, I think that is on the table. And, like, you look at that Vermont game. He had 19 points in that game. He was 7 of 11. So he only made it on 11 shots. And in this game, he shot the ball 16 times, still efficient, still what you wanted. And I really think that Cam Jones is a better version of himself, and that makes Marquette so much better, because it's like, what are you going to do? If you take away Tyler Kolek, Cam Jones is going to beat you. You don't want David Joplin to shoot the three. Cam Jones is going to beat you. I think the other thing that is, I think, underappreciated nationally about Cam Jones, I think we appreciate it as Marquette fans, is his ability to make tough shots is incredible. That I've called him the Tough Shot Express Conductor multiple times this Big East season, and it's so true. Like, the way that he's able to initiate contact, spin off a contact, is something else. He is a great finisher, and I think that's really important in the tournament, because every basket counts. Like, we saw it in the Wisconsin game, right? Klezmann, you know, had one that just hung on the rim. And if he hits that, Wisconsin's all of a sudden down 4. They're kind of chipping in. The momentum is starting to sort of turn. It stays on the basket. And then James Madison comes down and hits a 3. It's a 5-point swing. James Madison is up 9 at that point. And it completely changed the basketball game. And Wisconsin never gets close. And so the finishing matters. Also, the ability to have 5 made threes and you're back in that gym on Sunday, I think is massive. I think that is massive for Cam Jones to have the ability to say, okay, I know what it's like to shoot in this gym. I feel good in this gym. I can make sure that that will help. That sight lines, all that shit, like, that will matter for Sunday morning. I think that's really important for Cam Jones. So he has been a true weapon and continues to look that way. We talked about the second half versus the first half. I think, you know, just to further that point, like, you just can't have it happen again. I think you need to just take deep breaths, understand your moment, know that you are built for this, that this is not necessarily a surprise to anybody. They should play like they matter and they belong there. And I hope they do. Tyler Kolek is the next thing I had. He looked really good for round one. I feel like the true test is Sunday, but let's stay with what we saw on Friday. 18 and 11, played 38 minutes. He looked very much in control. And Shaka mentioned that, yeah, we wanted to get him a little more rest, but we just couldn't. And he didn't show any signs that the oblique was bothering him. There was some discussion that maybe he could have played in the Big East and Marquette just put him on ice because they knew that there were bigger goals ahead and wanted him to be fully healthy. And that looks so far like it has paid off. Like, Tyler, you know, had multiple moments. I mean, the knockaway against Western Kentucky was a major moment in the game of pulling away. Marquette was up 10 and Kolek missed a layup, like a pretty easy layup. And Western Kentucky gets the ball back. Kolek pokes it away. They then find Joplin for 3, and then Marquette goes up 13. So you think about that, because Western Kentucky still hung around. And if, you know, that doesn't happen for Tyler Kolek, you know, that could have, you know, made this thing more close. You know, Marquette really pushed it out in that final 10 minutes. They won that final 10 minutes by 15 points, outscoring 29-14. I mean, that whole second half was a masterclass by Marquette, putting up 51 points in that second half and holding Western Kentucky to 26. But still, like, that was, I mean, that was a major moment. And that's just Tyler Kolek being a very heady player, and the leadership that Tyler Kolek has and this refusal to lose. We saw it against St. John's in that game I referenced at National Marquette Day, where I've never seen a player like basically say, we're not losing this fucking game, and I am doing everything possible to make sure we win. I don't think I saw that. It wasn't at that level. Like, we didn't hit that peak, but I do think there were moments in that second half where Tyler Kolek's like, we are not losing this basketball game. Like, there is no way. I am not going out this way. And we saw it from Tyler. So good stuff from him. But like I said, true test on Sunday, because while the oblique injury, it looked fine, you now have a game with 1 day of rest. And so how do you do with that? How do you handle that? Are you able to? If that's the one that I worry about. So him playing 38 minutes in this game is a little concerning for that. I would have preferred this to be an 18-point win, but a blowout. So you only had Tyler Kolek playing 30 minutes, right? Or 25 minutes. That's best case scenario. Unfortunately, you didn't get that. So how is the stamina going to be for Kolek? I'm not worried about like his conditioning. I'm more worried, will that injury creep back in because he played so much on Friday? We'll just have to see. And the turnaround, I will say, as a, you know, you really do get basically two straight days, because you played Friday from 2 to 4 Eastern. Your next game is at noon Eastern on Sunday. So you do get essentially, you know, 2 full days of rest before getting back into it. Or, well, 1 day of full rest, I should say, not 2 full days. But you get my point. Like, it's not an issue where you have a little less time. That actually affects Colorado more than it does Marquette. David Joplin his progression was on full display. I think, you know, Jop's development this year has been one of the biggest takeaways, and one of the things that should make you feel good about the 2025 season is the way that Joplin has progressed has been such a joy to watch. He had 13 points in this game. He had 11 rebounds. He had 3 assists. He did shoot, you know, 9 three-point attempts. 3 went in. Maybe 9 three-point attempts is a little aggressive. I think in general, you know, Marquette saw so many open opportunities for three-pointers. They shot 36 of them because that's what Western Kentucky wanted to do. They needed to attack more. I think, you know, when the Marquette, you know, analytics team and the coaches look at it and say, you were 20 of 33 from inside the arc. Yes, you did make 13 threes, but you could have got a lot more at the 10, and you need to keep driving and cutting and finding those opportunities, and you don't need to shoot that much. And so, yeah, I've been impressed with Joplin. Also, his touch around the rim, my guy Mach mentioned that, it's getting so much better. I think Joplin has a chance next year to be a star. I really do. I think that is not out of this world. I think if he cuts a little bit more weight, gets a little faster, I think then it's like you could talk yourself into David Joplin being a second or late first-round pick next year, pending on his continued development. But it's on display, and it would not shock me if on Sunday we have a drop game. I would not be surprised. Again, I think if you want to kind of argue with yourself about the three pointers, these guys know kind of the rims now. They have an understanding of, okay, this is what we're up against, this is what we're dealing. Remember, they weren't really shooting that well against Villanova, and then they played Providence, and after they were comfortable with those Madison Square Garden rims, they went to fucking work. So I'm not saying it's going to be the same thing against Colorado, but I'm just saying keep that in the back of your mind. Marquette really, you know, put it on Providence in that second game, and everyone thought that would be a little bit of a fight, and it wasn't. So Joplin looked good. Really liked what I saw from Jop all game long. Oso Iguodala struggled. I mean, if that's the one thing to talk about from a negative perspective, is Oso did not play well in this game. Oso had 4 points. He was 2 of 7. He did pull down 8 rebounds. He had 5 block shots. So, I mean, I guess defensively, Oso was pretty good, but the offense wasn't there. He had a 77 offensive rating. It was the second lowest rating compared to Chase Ross, who had a 0. And I do want to mention the bench here in a second. I think Oso just, it seems like, I don't know if he's out of gas. I don't know if he's just thinking too much, but his stat line for the down the stretch here has been a little concerning. Like, you can't kind of get away from the Oso stat line of late here. So here's what we've seen. So in the Big East tournament, he had only 4 points against Villanova. Remember, he did not score in that game until the overtime period. Was really good against Providence, had 20 points in that game, but he did make, it was on 7 of 17 shots. And then had 8 points against UConn, had 4 points against Western Kentucky. So he's been in single digits for 3 of the last 4 games. His offensive rating has been under 100, which is kind of average, for 3 out of 4 games. And in the game against Providence, he was only at 110. So, and there really hasn't been this kind of bad stretch for Oso Iguodala all season. Like, after he was sick, he was 95. Like, he hasn't had, like, the only one that kind of is like this is Providence, Georgetown, and Creighton, where it was a little bit of a struggle for him. But they got to figure out a way to get him going. And if he's just exerting too much offensively, then, all right, like, let's figure a way out to make him more of a threat. But Eddie Lampkin, the guy he'll be going up against on Sunday, is more like Josh Adoro from Providence, where he's a bigger guy. Like, Oso can take that guy off the dribble. He can bring that guy out, and he is not going to be able to handle the speed and the lateral quickness of Oso Iguodala. So he has to get going. And so I do think with having Tyler Kolek back, that will help. And maybe it was that, where he was still adjusting to having Tyler Kolek back. We'll see. It was a weird game from him. I wouldn't say I'm overly concerned, but it would be a real bummer and a real discredit to what Iguodala is if he, you know, kind of peters out to finish off his college career. Last thing, I think all you need is one bench guy to be good for this team now that you have Tyler Kolek back. And Ben Gold was solid enough. I think he shot the ball a little too much. He had 8 points. He made 2 threes, but he also shot 7 of them. But I think as long as one guy is there, Chase Ross, it seemed a little too big for him after having a really good, you know, finish to the season. He had a trouble adjusting off the bench. I don't know if it means more Trey Norman, more Zade Lowry potentially, who only played 2 minutes each. Like, I don't know if maybe they cut into Chase Ross minutes or they try to ride with Chase Ross again. I think being a starter to a bench player is quite the adjustment. I think also maybe, you know, he knows if they get to the Sweet 16, he's in Dallas and he's back at his hometown. And I think that matters. So the last game where Tyler Kolek, you know, he went out, he played only 15 minutes against Xavier, did not play well. His last, like, good bench game was against DePaul, where he had 13 points. The last game that isn't DePaul, where he had a solid game, was that St. John's game at home, like, was really good, 25 minutes in that game. So I'm not giving up on Chase Ross. I'm not worried about it. Again, I think you just need one bench player to really sort of bring you home. All right, let's talk a little bit about Colorado and the game on Sunday. So Marquette is the first game. I kind of like it. Like I said, I'm streaming on PSF. I like that we get it out of the way. I like that I don't have to think about it. It does mean that if I go out tonight, I can't get too banged up, because it's right away. And you got to make sure that you have all your bearings and ready to go. The first thing that stands out is Colorado turns the ball over. They have a similar turnover percentage rate offensively as Western Kentucky. It's almost a carbon copy. I think Western Kentucky was like 266. Colorado's 253. So you can force Colorado into some turnovers. They didn't really turn the ball over that much against Florida, but that's still a major concern if I'm Colorado. They do shoot the three really well. They're 39% from distance, but they don't shoot it that often. They are more of a team that takes it inside. So that actually works to Marquette's advantage. I'm very curious to see if Colorado does try to let it fly a little more against Marquette, seeing what the opportunities Western Kentucky had and knowing that they have guys that can shoot threes. The question is the three-point percentage they have at 39%, is that based on just the fact they're not shooting enough? That will be something that I'm paying very close attention to. Another thing is you can pound the paint on Colorado. Colorado gives up the 34th most two-pointers in all of college basketball. So Marquette needs to attack. They need to go into the lane against this team. They allow a lot inside, and I think that needs to be a focus. They don't allow a ton. They run you off the three-point line. So I think that that is something Marquette needs to use as a focus. I think that needs to be a focus for Marquette in terms of that. They need to attack the rack and make sure that they are not falling in love with the three-point shot. I think that is imperative for the Golden Eagles. Colorado is decent on the offensive glass. We know that that is a concern for Marquette. They didn't have a lot of it against Florida, although Florida is a much better rebounding team against Marquette. They only had 5 offensive rebounds, so there is that. Also, they let Walter Clayton, the point guard for Florida, go absolutely bananas. Walter Clayton had 33 points in that game. I think that's a big red flag if you're Colorado with Tyler Kolek. I think Tyler Kolek or Cam Jones could have a massive game against this Colorado defense. The defensive metrics are good for Colorado, but you gave up 100 points to Florida. I think that at least has to be a concern against a Marquette team that is one of the top teams offensively per KenPom. So that has to be a red flag for Colorado. Also, they rely a lot on KJ Simpson, and we saw what Stevie Mitchell was able to do to Don McHenry. He's going to get the assignment for KJ Simpson. And I like that matchup for Marquette. I mean, you look at Stevie, and Stevie is 6'3", 200, while KJ Simpson is 6'2", 189. So they're pretty similar. There is not really a height or size advantage there. And you can certainly make that happen. And so I like Marquette in this game. I do. I don't think that I'm being a homer on this one. I know the Pac-12 has been good in the tournament so far. I know Colorado is on a heater. They have draft picks in Tristan Da Silva, Cody Williams. Lampkin's a talented player. I understand all of that, but I think this sets up nicely for Marquette. And I also think that they know that the South has opened up for them, right? And we'll see what happens, you know, with Oakland or NC State. But you'll face another double-digit seed in the Sweet 16 regardless. So that is right there for you. And we'll see what happens, obviously, on Sunday with James Madison and Duke. I think James Madison is live. I think Texas A&M is live against Houston. So those are all on the table right there for the Marquette Golden Eagles. So I think that they know, and I don't think that the moment's going to get too big. I also look at a guy like Tad Boyle. It's a lot different coaching against Tad Boyle than it is coaching against Tom Izzo, right? Like that, it's night and day. I'm trying to see if Colorado, this is probably bad radio, but I'm trying to think if Colorado, when's the last time they were at a Sweet 16? Marquette, it's been since 2013 for Marquette for a Sweet 16. But I will also say this, and I wanted to end with this because I wanted to talk about Wisconsin a little bit and the rest of the tournament. I saw Nate Marzon's tweet. I know he's, you know, pretty well respected in the content creation game. He needed to settle the fuck down. He's like, oh, it's Marquette's era now with Wisconsin losing. Shut up. We need to get to the Sweet 16. Like, all due respect. Like, we need to get to the Sweet 16 before you're running your fucking mouth. Okay? I said that to somebody else. Like, I'm going to do jawjacking once we get to the Sweet 16. I can't say shit until we get to the Sweet 16. Okay? Then I can talk my shit. Then we can go. But until then, shut the fuck up, okay? That's a little PSA to everybody. As for Sweet 16s for Colorado, they have not been to a Sweet 16 since 1969. Wow. That's something. I'm sure that'll be talked about. But very, very interesting to know that Colorado has not made it out of the Sweet 16. They were in the round of 32 in 2021, I think also under Thad Boyle. I gotta look at that. So that was the 21 season. They were really talented. That's right, they were 5 seed. They then played Florida State, and that was the COVID bubble tournament, and they got mollywopped by Florida State 71-53. after beating Georgetown, who, remember, Georgetown was in there and was a bid stealer, and they killed Georgetown. The next game, they come up and they absolutely get crushed by Florida State. So maybe a little bit of the same. We'll see. But yeah, we'll definitely be talking about it on Monday. We will have the live stream going tomorrow as well. So we hope to see you guys all there, whether you're a Marquette fan or you're not. I hope to have you guys. As I said, I wanted to just talk quickly about the rest of the stuff, just a couple observations. In the South, I won't talk too much about the games going on today, since, you know, obviously you'll be listening to it more about Friday and everything else. We'll see what happens with Houston. I think Houston, Texas A&M, and James Madison and Duke are two fascinating matchups. I can easily see it being Duke and Houston. I easily could see it being Houston and James Madison. I could easily see it being Duke and Texas A&M. I think all those outcomes are on the table for me. I really do. I don't necessarily like the Buzz Williams style, where he allows so many three-pointers, but he has a very good point guard in Wade Taylor. And what I've known from Buzz and watching Buzz in the past is he's a pretty good March coach. He's a very good schemer. It's a wonky system, and sometimes those win. Like, I think that's why, even though I think Grand Canyon also is live tomorrow against Alabama, that's also why Alabama, I think, can succeed, and Alabama can figure out a way to push themselves forward. As for the Wisconsin angle, I'm not a Wisconsin fan. I'm not here to dance on their grave. There's obviously a lot of questions about Greg Gard right now, and the fact that they have not made a Sweet 16 since 2017. I didn't realize it was that long. I realized what happened in 2020 was unfortunate. And I think Greg Gard and the Gard defenders, Greg's guardians, maybe, if you will, could say, like, all right, look, if we had 2020, we might have won the national championship. We might have, you know, who knows? The sky was the limit for that team. And that got robbed from them because of COVID. That's totally fair. But that also was 4 years ago, right? It was a long time ago. And I think for Greg Gard, I don't think he'll get fired this year. I think he's evolved the way that Tony Bennett has. I think the only way that Greg Gard would get removed is if they really believe they have the next guy in line. And there's really two guys I look at. I look at Lamont Paris in South Carolina, and I've mentioned Lamont a lot for Wisconsin. Because he's a Bo Ryan disciple, he does a lot of things like Bo Ryan. He took a South Carolina program from the gutter and made them into an SEC. They were nearly an SEC champion. They were right there. And I think the sky is the limit for South Carolina basketball, especially since they love their women's team. Their women's team is great. And they're really building something at South Carolina and can make themselves into kind of a basketball powerhouse. And they used to be pretty good at men's hoops. I mean, they went to a Final Four even when they weren't that good, but they had some moments, you know, in South Carolina basketball. And so you have Lamont Paris there. You also have TJ Olsenberger from Iowa State. Now, I know I've been tough on TJ in the past. There's like a Deontay Burton thing that we don't need to talk about, but the guy recruits Wisconsin really well. And the guy has won every place. He also wears shirts that are a size too small for him, but that's okay. But if you know that you could get TJ Olsenberger and you know you could get Lamont Paris, and you know either of them would come to Wisconsin or one or the other, then maybe you do move on from Greg Gard. Maybe you ask Greg Gard to retire and step down. I don't think they want to fire Greg Gard. I know Chris McIntosh has been ruthless, and I know he had enough of Paul Chryst. But Paul Chryst did not evolve like Greg Gard did. I think Greg Gard has at least evolved. I think Wisconsin, is not the team that they were in the past. Like, if you put Greg Gard and Tony Bennett up next to each other, I think you've seen a guy evolve in Greg Gard. I don't think Tony Bennett has evolved. I think Tony Bennett's still stuck in 2019, right? So I think that is a positive. They do bring a lot back. I think you have to convince AJ Storr to come back. I think it also, too, for AJ Storr, it would be reckless for him to go to another team in the transfer portal. Once go to the draft. I get it in that regard. It's a bad fucking draft, and there might be more guys coming out because it's a bad fucking draft, and I totally, wholeheartedly understand that. I think that if that's your motivation, I get it, just based on that, but I would imagine they stick with Greg Gard for one more year unless they are crystal clear, 100% guaranteed that Paris or TJO is coming there. And if that's the case, I think those are upgrades. If that's not, then I think they hold. And I do think Paris and TJO will be there next year. The only way that TJO is not there, or Paris, I don't think Paris would go to Kentucky. But if Kentucky opened up. If Kentucky opened up, I would imagine Olsenberger would be on the list for Kentucky. I think he has sort of the swagger. Like, it takes a special coach to be Kentucky's coach. Not everybody can do it. I think Shaka Smart would get mentioned for the Kentucky job. I really do. I know there are some Michigan murmurs. And he would be the ultimate hypocrite if he went to Michigan, by the way, because of the priority of football over basketball. And Shaka wanted basketball schools. And I understand Michigan has a rich basketball tradition. I get that. But it would be totally spitting in the face of everything you've said. And I don't think Shaka Smart's that guy. I know, I guess he grew up a Michigan fan. I don't know. I would be really surprised. Now, if he went to Kentucky, would I be surprised? I don't know if he'd be able to deal with that fan base. I don't know if that fan base would like what Shaka brings to the table, but I can't be ignorant. I know it's a blue blood. I know it's one of the top jobs in the country. I can't just put my head in the sand, okay? And that would be another reason why maybe you move on TJO, bring it back to the Badgers, because of the fact that, you know, he might be Kentucky's coach. And if that's, would he choose Wisconsin over Kentucky? I don't know. I don't think so, but who knows, right? If that's the ultimate, we don't know what coach's goals are, right? I think that's always a tough thing to be like, why would a coach decide to move on besides just the money? Like, what is the ultimate goal? So we'll certainly see. We'll see what happens. I think this carousel can get really out of control if Kentucky opens up. Because I think Cal would get hired by somebody. I don't know if Cal would just be like an advisor and whatever, but I think someone would talk themselves into Cal. I think Cal would take a year off and then would come back and coach. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Oh, by the way, last thing on the Badger coach. If they do open up, you're not getting fucking Jay Wright. Jay Wright's done coaching. So can leave that pipe dream at home. So I did want to just add that in at the very end. All right. We will be back on Monday. We'll talk about Marquette. We'll talk about the tournament. We'll talk about the Bucks. Maybe fit in the Brewers. Poor Brewers. They've been getting backseat Brewers. I'm not trying to do it that way. It's just how it goes. But all right, we will. We'll talk to you guys. Talk to you guys Monday. We'll see you then. All right, take care. Have a good one. Bye.